You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Susanna Collins is here!
The David Senator Goss. Herself.
Yes.
Thank you. I will now be only addressed as Senator Collins.
No. I don't know if that's an honor or...
Have you seen her pinned tweet?
Oh, wait, what?
Oh, okay, so true story. I have been getting so many... my mentions have basically been not great because a lot of people are mistaking me for Senator Susan Collins of Vermont, who is very a little controversial.
There's an A and an H that you're missing.
And also my avatar is like me and Kaka. Like, come on, people. so I tweeted out, I was like, just to clear this up, I am not Senator Collins. I'm a soccer reporter. Please address any comments and concerns to at Senator Collins,
you're
which is her handle.
People that is unfortunate that they have a person whose name is similar and said person
you guys,
gets blowback.
Literally over 4,000 likes on this tweet. And then I start getting tweets back from people that are like, oh man, I feel your pain. And it's like from a guy whose name is Brett Kavanaugh or Jerry Sandusky. And you're like, I don't have it that bad.
I hope that your fate is nothing like that.
No, Twitter was very amusing for me.
I only get
yesterday.
Nice tweets because I have Matt Doyle, the famous Broadway actor, and he's wonderful.
See? Yeah. What, that's also like appropriate.
Yeah.
I would just lean into that hard.
I think I'm the only Andrew Wiebe that hits Google in any real way. There's a David Andrew Wiebe.
There you go.
And I think he's like a Christian singer. And then I think there's a lot of
also
like lower
very nice.
League hockey players.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird.
So what is, let's just throw this out there. Average week, how often do you Google yourself?
Never.
Because you were quick on that.
No.
Well, I have Googled myself.
You
in the
know
past.
Exactly no. what
was Usually, in the past, it was always Andrew Wiebe, Soccer America.
Yeah.
Just to see who was just like, I didn't read Soccer America, but I was like, who's taking me down a peg?
Oh, Lord.
Those were always interesting reads. We have a big show coming up for you. Zito Madu, who writes for SB Nation, who is one of the most interesting writers in the soccer world, is going to talk to us about Black History Month and the roundtable that they taped up in Minnesota with Aiko Parra, Jessica McDonald, DeMarcus Beasley, and Mason Toy. So look forward to that and look forward to that roundtable, which will come out later on in February. We have interviews from LA, the final ones. That's it. We're done. Our parade of interviews, Jonathan Osorio, finally after delaying it. It is here, and Latif Blessing, the man who is nothing but smiles, also chatted with me in L.A. But we had a tweet here, and this is where I want to start us, from Ethan Folly. And it's to me, man, you push every single Miami rumor. They basically haven't delivered any of those players, coaches, or the stadium, but there's still always Miami rumors chat. Maybe talk about the rest of the league and then let them deliver something. I said I would make that a rule, but then I think they kind of delivered something. It looks like Rodolfo Pizarro is done, and we'll get to Walker Zimmerman in a second, but it seems like it's done. Monterrey tweeted out a release to their fans that said it's done. Did they mention Inter Miami in that one? Didn't see.
I didn't actually read.
I didn't either.
I saw the pictures and the video of Pizarro arriving at the airport.
Yeah, I mean,
in Miami.
He was like, "Yeah, David Beckham and I got on a video call, and that helped convince me." So, I mean, it's
done. It's just it's as we're recording this, it's not official, but
hasn't hit the inbox.
Will be when you guys are listening to this.
Yeah, never mind.
Okay.
But it's a good contribution, David.
Well, Felipe Cardenas wrote a fantastic piece for The Athletic about Inter Miami, and Paul McDonough sort of says,
Do we get like a share in The Athletic?
I get money every time you guys mention it. That's why I make sure we do it as much as possible.
Just making sure.
But he said basically it's done in the piece.
Nice.
Cool.
Now do we have any final thoughts? I mean, we've really talked about this one a lot because it's been dragging on for a long time, whether it was with the Chicago Fire reportedly and then over to Inter Miami.
It's just we've been talking about, I forgot Chicago was in for it. And it's like, then you're like,
that was such an evil laugh, Gus.
So there's been a lot of discussion as to his transfer fee, whether it was like somewhere around 17 or 20 million, which he's sold for like 16 million in the past.
Yeah.
A lot of press in Mexico saying it was at or above that number. Paul Tenorio from The Athletic says it's 12 for 100, 12 for 100% of his rights. Whether or not it's 12 or 19 million, I don't really care. It's, is he worth a DP slot? And yes, he is. At the same time, Rodolfo Pizarro is not a slam dunk best 11 player in this league. If you look at his performance over the past few years, especially, it's been very up and down. So there's people I talk to throughout the league, there's a certain amount of skepticism about having him as a centerpiece figure. The rebuttal to that I would have is before Federico Higuain arrived, before Diego Valeri arrived, even before like Nico Lodero arrived, like Broca fans were happy to see Lodero go. Diego Valeri was not beloved at his previous clubs. There, like, this league has a long history of super talented playmakers kind of finding their homes here and being able to get the best out of their talent. If that's what happens with Rodolfo Pizarro in Miami, they will have hit jackpot at whatever price. But it is an if. Like, his expected assists last year per game, per 90 minutes, it was like 0.1, which is about a quarter of what you would expect from an A-tier playmaker. So he has to figure that out. They have to figure out the best way to use him, and they have to get it out of him every single week, which Monterrey never really did, and which Chivas arguably never really did.
Diego Alonso, of course, has experience with Rodolfo Pizarro from Pachuca. He was one of those guys that he really brought along, helped turn him into that $16 million player. You mentioned that there are some disparate reports.
Yeah.
In Mexico, they say 18. In the U.S., they say 12. With transfer rumors, with transfer fees, you almost always have to ask yourself, what is the person saying this have to get out of it? I personally think that I trust Paul Tenorio.
I moved to just change his name to Report Tenorio.
Report Tenorio?
Yeah.
We're having Rumor Stachel for the prediction show.
Which I'm excited about because that's a very, like, rumory, let's just have fun and, like, throw things out
nothing
there.
Nothing concrete.
But if you need something done, you talk to Report
Part
Tenorio.
But it almost doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Though, right? Because whether it's 12
it's
or
not,
20,
it's not,
here's the disagreement.
It's a DP slot.
Here's the disagreement. Yes, in terms of salary cap numbers. But then it becomes, if they paid $20 million for him, what else could they have gotten? That's the only reaction as a fan.
That
listen,
ownership,
it's not my
that
money,
ownership
I don't
group
care.
Is not going to go bankrupt between the 12 and
no,
20
but you
million
only
dollars.
Get three deep. They only have one more DP spot open. They spent that money there, and not saying they won't spend it again. But then you could have had two. Like,
isn't the flip side?
Personally,
of that?
If I had an MLS team spend $20 million and then salary, I don't want to see it on Rodolfo Pizarro.
But these
that's
are
not the player I want to watch for
problems
that.
Because this is the most. This is the biggest transfer window in the history of any MLS club, no? Has to be, right? With the money they spent on Carranza,
no,
with the money they spent on Pellegrini, with these other players coming in, this has to be.
Yeah, they just signed two, like, South American U-20 national team
Andres Reyes is one, Colombian international from
and then they got a Bolivian guy as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the biggest transfer window in the history of Major League Soccer.
Just in terms of outlay, yeah.
And people are still being like, nah, I don't know. It's not good enough.
No, because the reason that this question came up, every comment that from ownership down that they have made over and over again, including in this article where Paul McDonough says we're going to make another designated player signing because the summer does no good for us. We want to get it done now. They keep promising things. So you ask why there's expectations of them signing a Suarez or a Messi or whatever coach, because they set those expectations. And then they get simpletons to talk about them over and over and over.
Looks
wow.
Like a, it looked like you were pointing at me, but I couldn't tell.
No, I was just stoking
sure
the flames over here.
I wasn't sure what that meant right there. I think the other thing with the fee that does matter is that, this is just my opinion, the fees from Liga MX to MLS over the last year and a half or so have probably been a little bit inflated over what you would call quote-unquote market value. Now, market value is whatever anybody will pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that the market sets itself. But I'm not sure that anyone else would have paid those numbers, but MLS is in a position where they need those players. They have the money, and so they made the moves. The question I have is, how does that affect the market long term? At some point.
And the club.
Correct.
Right? Because now Inter Miami, this is what you've spent at this number. If I'm going to sell you a player X down the road, this is my expectation. This is what you paid for Pizarro. This guy has this much production. This is where you guys value this. This is what you have to pay.
Yeah, it's interesting. There'll be some long term sort of tentacles to this deal, but it seems like it's done. There are some long-term tentacles and some short-term ones to Walker Zimmerman's trade from LAFC to Nashville SC. Up to $1.25 million in allocation money. It's all GAM now. TAM does not exist in a tradable form. It is only discretionary, which we explained to you, which means you can only spend it on your team, your players. GAM is now the allocation money that can be moved around. I was also told that any TAM that was previously traded, so you did a deal 6 months ago, you got a bunch of TAM over the course of X number of years, that's just now GAM, which makes sense because all TAM is now just being converted from that 1.2 to 1.2 TAM to GAM.
So I move that they rename TAM to something that doesn't rhyme. Involve allocation, the word allocation, so we could just call this allocation money. But anyway.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Wait. I second that.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
I third that.
I don't have a mug, but I'm in.
That's
it's
a fourth.
Been decided yes. here on this February 13th.
Yeah, we'll see if that works out for us. But if it does happen, it was our idea. So 1.25 is the kind of top end of that. You remember there are always conditions to these things. My understanding is that Walker Zimmerman most likely will meet all of these conditions and we'll get to 1.25, which potentially makes it the biggest trade in MLS history. It already is or will be. At $950,000, Aiko Parra was up to $1 million, the biggest trade for an MLS defender in MLS history. Walker Zimmerman just got done with U.S. National Team camp. He was a best 11 player last year. He's entering the prime of his career. He just had signed a new deal with LAFC. You might remember that little saga ahead of last season. And now, unceremoniously, Susanna, in the dark of night, that's not entirely sure, true, but it was.
It felt like.
a lot of people said to me when I was calling around about this that it was, quote, out of the blue for them.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw this one trickle over? When Paul Tenorio, report Tenorio, put it over the Twitter airwaves.
Yeah, no, this one definitely shocked me. Was not anticipating this at all. I mean, as you mentioned, this is a best 11 player. This is a national team stalwart. I mean, he's a good, solid center back is tough to find these days. And this was he was, I know it's interesting because I want to look at his relationship with Bob Bradley, because I think, you know, there were some points last year where he wasn't playing and, you know, when you look at his body of work, you think, you know, this is a guy who is, should be just an everyday starter. And so, you know, you start to wonder if maybe there was little cracks in that relationship,
some hints.
Yeah. Because when you look at it from an outside perspective, you think, my God, like this is, I mean, that back line, like, and then what does that LAFC do now? You know, how do you move Tristan Blackman? Like, what do you do with your back line? And when you lose a piece like Walker Zimmerman, now from Walker's point of view, I mean, going to Nashville and expansion side, he's a Georgia boy. I know he's incredibly close with his family. So I think moving closer to home and like the actual move for him is not, you know, a terrible thing.
The way I think about it is once you grieve the loss,
yes.
Because there is a loss to grieve.
Of course,
you're going
of course.
From
and
a
LA,
team
the best team,
build.
Exactly. And yeah. Which was the best team in MLS going to an expansion side that has not played
unknowns.
1 minute of MLS
you
soccer.
Went from being we're going to go win MLS Cup this year.
Yeah.
We might win CCL. We might get 3 trophies. We might be legends in this city to
40 points.
Yeah. Well, to just like brand new, who knows? It's
right.
A complete unknown.
But for Walker, this is also an opportunity for him to be the guy, you know? I mean, very much be the guy in Nashville. Gary Smith has assembled what Doyle has, you know, described as a very defensive-minded team. Walker Zimmerman now has an opportunity to be the fulcrum of that, and I think it's a good opportunity for him, but for LAFC, I'm a little bit concerned. A little bit concerned about
Club
that backline.
Leon is coming up. They go to
Leon. Yeah, CCL is like
week.
Here.
Our CCL preview comes out on Monday. Just FYI on that one. We talked a lot about this move and what it might mean. Now, you mentioned sort of the hints. Tristan Blackman played 7 games down the stretch last year with Eddie Segura, partnered in central defense. He got a new deal this offseason as well. He's younger. He's cheaper. They paired together against the Galaxy in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They went back to Zimmerman in the game that they lost to the Sounders. What does this mean for LAFC? And then we'll dig more into Nashville.
I mean, long term, it means a lot more roster flexibility because of, I mean, I'm going to assume that Tristan Blackman's cap hit is much smaller than Walker Zimmerman, who was, I believe, $650,000, $700,000.
Yeah, right around there. And you'd figure because of the new, you'd feel it'd be a little higher. He got best 11, so there's bonuses that
probably
come into play. And that might be part of
there.
This, too. Yeah. You have to remember, once players get those bonuses, hit those, that gets added onto their cap hits in later seasons.
So I think that's a big one. The other one is Bob Bradley has always bet big on his own ability to bring the best out of young players. And when you've had young players like Mike McGee and Ricardo Clark and Eddie Gavin and Michael Bradley and, you know, all down that Sasha Kljestan, that was in his previous life in MLS. And you look at what he's done with guys like Marc-Anthony Kaye and obviously Edouard Atuesta, Latif Blessing. Why would you not bet big on that? So Bob Bradley probably believes that he can turn Tristan Blackman into a Walker Zimmerman or higher level center back. I assume they're going to use that cap flexibility to add a right back. I am surprised it didn't happen immediately. I as soon as like the news broke on like at like 8:45 a.m., I expected there to be another news break an hour later about the new LAFC signing. And the fact that there hasn't been one yet, we're recording this
it
anyway.
It seems like Nashville came in and gave them an offer they couldn't refuse.
Yep.
And so maybe they weren't prepared for this. It happened over the last
but
2 weeks.
Nashville's had this money for, you know, for a year.
Yeah. I don't think LAFC was necessarily shopping him.
No,
I think
Like, why did the offer they couldn't refuse only come now after they've used expansion draft picks?
Because
I think
Nashville has tried to get an international guy and it hasn't gone well. And so then they said, well, what can we do? And they looked around the league and he was a best 11. He's
My understanding
top
is
five
been
in
going
defender
after
of the year.
For a year, and that LAFC said we aren't moving him, and then it finally came to this point, and the number was too big, and they said fine, which I can understand maybe because Walker was not there for preseason. So if Bob and John Thorrington are looking at your preseason and they're saying, oh, you know what, we moved Jordan Harvey inside, he looks good enough. Look, I'm with you on that one. I don't think he should play inside. He's a left back. But Tristan Blackman got reps last year. We saw what he could bring in a Supporters Shield winning side. He's been here for preseason. We think we can survive this. Summer maybe brings another player. The transfer window, the primary one for MLS, doesn't close until May anyway, so we have time. I mean, the big question is about CCL. Does it hurt them in CCL?
Yeah, because going against Club León, like they're scoring a lot of goals.
And maybe,
they're atop the Clasera. You know, like they have in Mena in particular, but a few of their other guys, they have guys who put the ball in the back of the net, and this makes it tougher.
So my other question, though, past the CCL point, and I agree with you on flexibility and for them doubling down on the belief that they can create good players or bring in the right guys. I think at some point, though, you do need stability in a team. And so when you look at this group in 12 months, is Eddie Atuesta there? Is Marc-Anthony Kaye there? Is Eddie Segura there? Because Eddie Segura should have been higher in Defender of the Year voting. The guy's only 22 years old.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have a point where they look down the road and wish that they had someone like a Walker Zimmerman who they already
maybe
had
they
signed.
Maybe they think Blackman is that guy.
Maybe.
You know, and to answer your question, I don't think Atuesta is going to be there in 12 months. He might not be there
in 6 months.
Well,
that was the whole point of the buying spree like central midfield.
They're trying.
U23 players. It's like, get him here now, and then when we sell Atuesta, there is some continuity.
But now you have a 20-year-old who's never started playing in front of Tristan Blackman, in front of a goalkeeper you didn't have. At some point, you need some sort of spine, something to fit things in. We saw what worked for the Red Bulls with bringing Aaron Long through from Red Bulls 2 was like,
yeah, but this
that
is,
allowed
to this is Tristan Blackman's third year.
Yeah.
It's not like they're just ripping him out of college yesterday. He's a professional. He's played, as Weeby said, he started in playoff games. I don't think the disconnect is that.
The question to me is more about depth for LAFC because
for
this
sure.
is a team that should be trying to go after CCL, Open Cup. They're not in League's Cup. I was about to throw that in there. CCL, Open Cup, Supporters Shield, MLS Cup. I mean, this is potentially a four-trophy team. They're that good. They have that much talent. We'll see what it means for them. I think LA look at themselves and look what they've done so far and not – incorrectly so, and think we might be the smartest guys in the room. And so you look at a lot of the things they've done, their scouting network, the signings that they've made, some of the squad progression that they've had.
They've done some stuff right.
This is a time for them to say, we understand the way this is going to work. We're going to execute on this. We're going to get 1.25 in an international roster spot. We have flexibility. Maybe they have cap issues that we don't know about. Maybe this 1.25 is like putty on some walls there. and then we have a little bit more later on, and we'll just let our scouting speak for itself. We'll get another guy that's good enough at a lower price. We'll see. That's the test for them. They have big ambitions, and they have a big game coming up against Leon.
I'm surprised they didn't ask for Jack Marabek. He was a second overall pick in yeah.
There's a lot of center backs in Nashville now.
Which
is good, because really those guys, I mean, Nazarit, Anibaba, Romney, Mayer.
Look,
fight it out, boys. Only one of you is a starter.
I want to make this point about Nashville's point of view.
Like,
none of us thought that center back was going to be a position of need for this team, because Dave Romney and Jahlil Anibaba were starters for playoff teams last year. Nazarit is a young, high upside center back coming from Colombia. They like him a lot. Jack Mayer.
Dice roll, though.
Not a complete dice roll. At some point, you have to trust your scouting, and you have to trust the pipeline.
But even that scouting...
For sure. It's not a sure thing.
Fine.
But
we're
I don't think anybody would have identified center back as the place where they were going to throw a lot of money at trying to upgrade in this window, given the previous work they had done. However, Bobby Boswell to D.C., Chad Marshall to Seattle, Michael Parkhurst to Atlanta, Ike Opara last year to Minnesota, even Walker Zimmerman to LAFC 2 years ago. The lesson we should have learned over the last 6 years is that if you are an incomplete or a bad defensive team, you literally cannot overpay for a high-level, experienced MLS center back. And $1.25 million in allocation money is a lot for any player. But I said that last year about Ike Opara. $1 million? That seems a lot. Like a lot for Ike Opara. He was worth three times that much.
Yeah.
If you think that Walker Zimmerman is at that level, then this will end up being cheap for Nashville in the long run, no matter how much depth and how much potential they already had.
Do you think that Walker Zimmerman coming into Nashville is at that level?
I don't think he's Ike Opara or Chad Marshall level. I think he can be a step down. Like I didn't have him on my best 11 last year. I had him on my second best 11. Like, he was really good. He was really good, and he's 26.
The way I think about it is that there's a ceiling and a floor, and we talk in this way all the time. Nashville's ceiling, just throw it out. Nobody has any idea how this attack's going to mesh. They say they want to get a DP number 9. That could change that ceiling, but their floor just rose considerably, in my opinion. And the whole goal, and again, just me, for Nashville this year is to not be Minnesota or Cincy, to not be inept.
Yeah, you can't give up 70
goals. Be respectable. And Walker Zimmerman not only will help you do that on the field, but also off the field, because he was a huge part of sort of building a culture in LA as well. He really embraced that, was the forward face for that a lot of the time. And there's also good news in Nashville, by the way, off the field.
Oh.
I'll just say it, though. You can say whatever you want to say. Their soccer stadium is a go.
Which is great.
The club and the mayor agreed to a revised deal, and that was some serious, it was a lot.
Yeah.
It felt like a lot.
I was just going to go to what Susanna said, which was like, now he's the man. It's his job to organize a back 4, 5, 8 at times that's going to sit deep, and their entire goal or their entire focus is to be strong defensively. Mm-hmm. And at LAFC, it was to attack the ball and play high and get into space. And at FC Dallas, he played next to Matt Hedges. So this is going to be a learning experience for him. And it's definitely a step up in terms of responsibility and role into a system that I don't think fits his best attribute, which is his athleticism and his ability to cover ground. So to me, it's going to be fascinating to watch him fit in here. But if he does really well this year, I think it takes him to another level in terms of national team potential, just because it shows how his game has developed and where he's at mentally.
Yeah, big question for him on the national team too. When you're in the best team in the league, it's oftentimes easy to look good, easy to get the plaudits. You know, those best 11 start coming when you're with the best team. So
is Eddie Segura preseason pick for defensive player of the year?
He might be in that conversation.
He should be in the conversation.
Well, I'm saying, like, to say it.
Oh, yeah, to be favorite.
Yeah, to be like, this could be the guy, because they're going to be good again. Yeah. Big news for Nashville. Big news for LAFC. We'll see how it pans out next week against Club Leon. Nashville continue their preseason. We're going to go on a little break here, but it's not a break. It's an interview with Zito Madu from SB Nation. He was the moderator for the MLS Black History Month Roundtable, which will air on MLS channels later on this month. Take a listen to this conversation. We'll be back with an ode to Nacho Piatti. It's February, Black History Month, and of course, MLS's Black History Month Roundtable will come out later on this month. Ikel Parra, Jessica McDonald, DeMarcus Beasley, Mason Toy, the moderator of that panel, was Zito Madu, staff writer at SB Nation. You know him from Twitter, @_Zeets. Zito, how's it going, man?
It's all right. How are you?
I'm good. I hear you're at a layover at JFK, so we caught you at the perfect time to have a conversation that must be had. And that is about the experience of black players in this game that we all love. That was a diverse group on that panel. The experiences on the panel from all different kind of nooks and crannies, not just of soccer, but of society. What did you take away?
I took away a lot of different things because there were a nice diverse group. Like Ike is Nigerian, African-American. And then you have DeMarcus Beasley, who's like a legend in the game. And then you have Mason Toy, who's like a younger player trying to find... trying to determine his identity and find himself within the game as well. But I think one of the most like enlightening individuals there was Jessica McDonald, just because of the fact that I think a lot of times when we have these discussions, there's usually a very standard male perspective on it. And Jessica's story, not just as a black woman in the game, but also like a black single mother who's just had an incredible number of trials and tribulations within it, and who, I guess, like, she would be called a late bloomer, but her rise isn't more about talent, but about overcoming so many obstacles in front of her. And so just hearing her story about, like, the fact that she had to bring her son in, like, to some of the games and some of the practices because she was dealing with not being paid enough to even have childcare, and then having to find a family to take care of her son when she's traveling. And so it was an incredible thing just to listen to her and, like, just to see what she means to so many young black girls these days by the fact of her representation at the top level of the game, being a U.S. women's national team player, winning a World Cup, being also a very expressive woman, like, you know, having dreadlocks, having her tattoos, like, being very confident in herself. And so I thought, like, a lot of times we just have a very directly male idea about these issues, and then just having Jessica there, like, talk about these things and, like, enlarge that conversation was very wonderful.
Before we dig in a little bit more, Zito, there's an opportunity for all the folks on this panel to sort of put their voice, their beliefs out there in a way that oftentimes traditional media or the way that they're portrayed doesn't give them opportunity to do. You had an opportunity, too, to pull that out of them. As you walked into this, what were you hoping to get? What were you thinking about? How did you plan around this? What did you want the final product to look like? What were you curious about?
Well, because we have so many different types of people, I wanted to showcase at least how diverse even the idea of blackness is. And so if you have someone like Ike who has Nigerian parents, but he was, like, born here, his experience of blackness is different from someone like Mason Toy, who's like a young black kid who's coming into the game when there's other black individuals in the game in a way that it wasn't for Beasley. And so what we would talk about is, like, DeMarcus Beasley saying things like when he was growing up, he could barely find, like, black teammates or, like, black coaches to talk to. And then Mason would just come up like, well, he has those things that Beasley never did. And so his experience is different, even though they still share, like, certain burdens as well. And then, of course, just having Jessica there, just, like, which adds a whole another dimension to it. So I wanted to showcase just how big this idea of blackness is. And even though everybody has their share of struggles, there's certain things that are just different. And in order to really understand it, you have to understand it from, like, all the different angles of it.
You mentioned black coaches and that being a difference for Mason versus DeMarcus, and representation is something that in these conversations we always talk about, and it really is just a buzzword until it's actually acted upon, right? So what were the conversations within this group like? How do you view representation for black people within soccer, whether that be all the way down at the grassroots level up to the top of the pros?
Well, one of my main ideas about soccer and why I like soccer so much is because it's an expansive game. It's a global game. Like, the entire principle of the game is the fact that it's, like, inclusive of everyone. And so when you have it in the United States, where it's such an exclusive thing because it's so expensive and it ostracizes certain people out of the game, it feels so antithetical to what that game is about. And so what ends up happening is, like, you'll have someone like DeMarcus Beasley coming up who loves the game, who wants to play the game, and he can't find, like, another black player on any of his teams growing up. And then you have, like, I even asked Mason about it, about the fact that when he was, because, you know, he was a basketball player at first. And so when he transitioned from basketball to soccer, having basketball where there's a lot of black coaches, there's a lot of, like, you know, upper-level black individuals in the game. And then coming into soccer and just having this culture shock where he can have an experience on the field and he wants to talk to a higher-level person about it, about that same, like someone who could relate to him, and just not having that outlet in that same way. And so what I hate about the buzzword of diversity is it's almost seen as like something you do for the optics or something that you do profitable of if you do these things, then you can appease these people that's asking for this thing. When it's more about representing like your society, representing what the game should look like, opening this up so more people can have a chance at the game, just going back to what the principle of the game is supposed to be. And also just the simple fact that it takes more work than just saying these things, right? Like, it has to actually come with a reckoning, and it has to actually come with you doing the work of getting away from hiring people that just looks like you, right? Like, it's like representation isn't just for representation's sake. It's just for the sake of fairness. It's just for the sake of justice of what this game is supposed to be about.
And for strength as well, in organizations, yeah. In ideas. I mean, look.
Yeah, the more different people you have in your game, the more different people you have in your corporations, the more people that you'll be able to relate to, the more people that you'll be able to appeal to, and then the better and stronger than most of your ideas will be.
Where do you think it's most important? Because there's always a hierarchy of these things. To really focus on that, to say, hey, we have to demand, we have to ask for, we have to put pressure on people to put these people, hire people to make, you know, black soccer players, whether it's on the women's or the men's side, coaches, administrators, to give them opportunity. Where's that most important in your mind?
Well, I think it has to start at all levels. If you're, you know, a soccer corporation, or if you're just a soccer country and you want the best players to come in, then you must be able to open up the game that like those who aren't wealthy could still play it, right? Because talent isn't about wealth, right? You could have, I think what we've learned from soccer in every country is simply that like poor kids are usually very good at it because that's how they play. And soccer is about play. But if you have a soccer program that ostracizes those kids away from the game, or you haven't built like the avenues for them to even get into the game to begin with, then you're not doing the best that you could do to maximize what soccer is in your country. And then in the levels above that, I know MLS has its own sort of Rooney rule, but the only way that that then works is if you actively work with it all the time, right? You can't just have a rule in place and then just you just interview black coaches and then just pass them up anyway, right? Like it takes having the courage to actually start looking at the ranks of your coaching or like the ranks of your coaching in the game and then determining like this is not right. Like there's no way that you should have a soccer program in a country and it looks as homogeneous as it does now for the United States. And then it has to take somebody being very active and bringing in other people, like even bringing in black people and like bringing in Latino coaches. And it also makes it easier for the black players that you will bring in eventually, because now they'll have somebody else in those higher ranks to talk to. And I think we, like BZ especially brought up a very important thing, or like it was a very bizarre thing for me to experience, of the fact that somebody like DeMarcus Beasley, who's now retired, wants to be in the front office or wants to work in some front office, and he doesn't get any calls and he hasn't had any like substantial talks about these things, but it is a passion of his. He wants to work in that game. He wants to rise up to that level because he thinks it's important for a former player, a former soccer player, a former black soccer player to be represented in those hierarchies and able to have like that hiring power, that ability to affect the team. But then having him saying that he doesn't, like, nobody's wanted him so far is just a bizarre thing, especially seeing some of the people who are in those positions in the game. So it's things like that. Somebody has to have the courage to look at these things and, like, this is not a fair situation and we have to find a way to remedy this. And part of that is just moving away from what you know and taking a chance to, like, expand the game beyond what it already is.
DeMarcus Beasley, everybody, available. If you're listening to this, you want obviously a guy who's done it for a long, long time all over the world. Go talk to DeMarcus. Also, Zito, DeMarcus was, in my mind at least, kind of when I started being really involved in the game, one of the guys who you could always look to and say he is going to express himself. He has style. He has something a little bit different. And oftentimes, especially with black athletes, you see personal style and expression sort of it's sort of villainized. You see it in like the NBA's dress code all the way back. I mean, the way people think about Allen Iverson, he was a pioneer on that end. How can we as a society make it more mainstream, let's say, for personal expression to be accepted from anyone and everyone?
Well, the funny thing is, when I asked all the players about who their heroes were growing up, like it was four people, and all of them had Allen Iverson as one of their heroes growing up. And so there is a lot of power in, like, at that time of seeing someone like Allen Iverson just claim his identity and refuse to budge under the weight of the NBA. Like, even having that dress code that basically was just against him in order to, quote-unquote, get out hip-hop culture from the game. But it is the thing of just, like, so many negative connotations are associated with black culture in the first place. But I think the MLS or just U.S. soccer in general could take a cue from what the NBA had to realize the hard way, which is that if you let players express themselves, that's what draws kids to the game. Like, kids like cool personalities. They like cool people. And if you're over here strangling them just so they can be as inoffensive as possible, which isn't to say just let everybody run wild to be offensive, but there's nothing offensive about like players expressing themselves. There's nothing offensive about like Mason Toy being able to dance and do like the cool dance moves that he does with his friends, or even like just the way that they dress. That's just at the point of that, just is just this idea of like blackness as a very threatening situation. And so, like, talking to all these players, it was one thing that they all had to grow into. Like, Beasley from the start was able to express himself, and he took control of his narrative. And even when he was more in the background saying that he didn't even need the limelight, he never compromised what his identity was. And then having Jessica, who's, you know, tattooed up, dreadlocks, she's never going to bend who she is for anybody else at this point. And then even Ike, who talked about it at the same way, of like he had to grow into it and become very comfortable. Like when he first came into the game, he was afraid that he couldn't really express himself because he didn't think that he had been in the game long enough. And he knew whenever people are threatened, they're just going to find a way to ostracize you in the first place. And so just this thing, and then the fact that they built the foundation for someone like Mason to be able to express himself and be able to, you know, be who he is fully in the game without feeling some sort of like outward pressure to like restrain who he is. But it's the thing of, I continuously try to tell people all the time, is like, if you let players have fun, kids or like more people are going to like the game because it's going to open it up and it's going to be more inviting. And like, what sells any sport beyond what happens on the field is the emotional connection that you have with players. It's what these players mean to you. And if you're constantly turning players into like the most, or you're trying to restrain them to be as mediocre as possible in terms of personality in order not to offend anybody, then you're doing a disservice to what the game could potentially be.
Absolutely, man. Last one for you here. And of course, people should go check this out when it drops, the MLS Black History Month Roundtable. It's going to air on all of MLS channels. We'll let you know when the exact date comes. But Zito's your host and moderator on that one. I just want to open it up to you, man. What do you feel needs to be said? What do you want to say?
The reason why this was so important to me, and like the reason I wanted to do the moderation for, is the fact that like I think it's necessary conversations to have, not just in order for these black individuals to talk about what they're going through at the time, but just in order to force this issue continuously about like this is something that needs to be looked at. This is just part of the everyday life of, you know, black players in U.S. soccer. But I also wanted to talk, what I wish that we had more time to do was to talk about how this isn't a case that's just on the backs of these black players to deal with, right? Like, if we're talking about racism in soccer, we're talking about just, like, all these societal problems, it's going to take way more than just, like, black players just having conversations about it, or like black people just having conversations about it, because it's going to take a whole reckoning of like the society around them to realize that like something like racism is just a disease of not just of the mind, but like of the community. And in order to make things better, it's going to take a continued effort between everybody. Like we were talking about representation, like DeMarcus Beasley just can't hire himself into like a front office role. It's going to take somebody else who has that power in order to put him there, right? It's going to take allies. It's going to take champions to do that. And in order for people to do that, they have to realize, first of all, like you have to be able to look at your front office and, or like the front offices around the league and think like there's something really wrong with the fact that the labor pool of the league looks a certain way. And then the higher areas of it looks a way different way than the labor pool does. And so what I wanted is like, yes, these black players can express themselves and express the troubles that they deal with. They can express their anxieties on and off the field, but these problems are not just going to get solved by them. It's going to be a losing battle if the only people who are fighting it are the players. So even from things of being like racially abused on the field, if a black player is racially abused, it's the only way that it has any substantial effect is if not only the player themselves protest about it, but if their teammates stand in solidarity with them, or like even the fans and the fans make it known that this thing is not part of the game that we want. And so what I like about soccer so much, and like why I like these conversations, is that soccer is oftentimes just a reflection of like the society. Like all the problems that we have in soccer are always like, if I wanted to look at problems of representation, I could look at every team in the MLS, or I could just look at like big companies in the United States. But so there are problems of society, but like I also like that soccer just has that power to recreate the world that we want. Like if soccer wants, it could be a shining example of how things should go, because the nature of soccer is to be inclusive. It's to be fair, right? Everybody wants to go to a soccer game and have as much fun as possible. Like we all want to share in the same joys. So what I always want is like, I want everybody to be able to see the game that same way of all these ills that are in the game don't necessarily have to be in the game. And if we start fixing it, even at this base level, then it could be a good way for us to reimagine what the world should be outside.
Love that, man. February is just a month. Black History Month is a time to start a conversation, but there is much, much more to be done. Listen to this thing. Watch it. MLS Black History Month Roundtable. It's going to air on our channels very soon. You have Zito hosting this thing, Ike Opara, DeMarcus Beasley, the legend, Mason Toy, Jessica McDonald, who has a completely different perspective. Zito, thank you so much for joining us. People that want to follow him, @_Zeets on Twitter. Thanks, man.
No problem.
A lot to think about there. Big thanks to Zito for joining us. Let's talk soccer, I guess, and let's talk Nacho Piatti. It finally happened. He's back to San Lorenzo. It seemed like he wanted this. He got what he wanted. We were supposed to wait. Dave, you told me I had to wait.
Yes, I did.
You were like, yeah, you got to wait. Don't do it until it's official. Well, it's official now. Nacho Piatti, an appreciation. Maybe it's a memory. Maybe it's just sort of an overall commentary on his career in Major League Soccer. What?
I'd say there was a 3-year span where if they played any for 7 months of the year, we would say if you play them in the playoffs, there's a chance that you could lose because they can defend and Nacho Piatti can score against anyone. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a credit to who he was. He was one of the most exciting players when he picked up the ball in that space, especially if the game had opened up at all. Him cutting in off that left side, blowing by defenders, can curl a shot into the far post, can beat you all and get straight to the goal. So he was exciting. He was fun. He was a good part of a team. And I thought they had some competitive years where he raised the level of their game. Obviously, they went to a CCL final.
He was the basis of their
He just made it look so easy.
Yeah.
Just made it was like he was breaking ankles every single game. It was just like, and he made it look so seamless and easy. And that ain't easy.
No.
And
it is easy.
It's hard to pick out.
Have your ankles broken?
Well, that part. But like, I can't, it's hard for me to pick out a single moment because there were so many that were so similar.
He had the goal at Azteca CCL final.
Yeah.
It was there. He showed up in big moments, both in the playoffs. and NCCL for this team. And that was, I also think about him in terms of like what he was before he came here, because he was on the brink of something special with San Lorenzo and Copa Libertadores, and just the way that the deal shook out, he wasn't able to participate in that final, and that had to be so painful for him as an individual to not be able to be there for his club in that moment, despite the fact that he had this move that was happening. So I always think about that moment with Nacho, but ultimately I think about him as the epitome of a goal-scoring winger. Like, if you can find somebody, for a long time I did these like skills of the week things, and I would go through, and he was always there. Like, his change of pace, unbelievable. He'd be standing still.
There was one goal where he like fell down and like got back up.
It's crazy.
Like, still, like,
didn't he score first
like
half
10 guys
against LAFC 2 years ago?
Yeah, I don't remember that, but really? I probably
they
should.
They tied 4-4, which was bad, but he had a first half hat.
Yeah, I mean, look, Nacho is the sort of player that you hope you're signing when you go down to Argentina.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of years and did a lot of good work with the Montreal Impact. We're going to miss you, Nacho. Anything to add before we hit Latif Blessing? Got a fun interview there.
Doyle has nothing to say.
I loved Nacho Piatti. I wish he had been able to... I wish the team was better constructed around him during his time here.
Agreed. Fair. And I also wish he could have left on a note that wasn't like preseason, after a season with injuries. I wish there was sort of like Nacho waving to the fans at Stade Saputo after... you know, whatever it might be, a hard-fought playoff game, or I don't know. Canadian championship.
Let's
brouhaha.
Just lay it out there the way it should be. Doyle, which Michael Bay movie would you compare Nacho Piatti to?
God, is he more of an Armageddon guy?
Or... is he just Transformers 1?
Oh, wow.
Or Transformers 2?
I don't know.
He had expectations.
I never saw the second one.
No, he's not.
I got my fill
Revenge of the Fallen or Dark of the Moon?
I got my fill of that particular cinematic universe about 8 minutes into the first one.
Okay.
I don't know how you fly anywhere then.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll be right back. Latif Blessing to bring some smiles to your face.
Segura, Vela in the middle. Vela trying to get it away. Falls for Latif Blessing. Blessing around. Big and there it is. 3-2.
10 minutes with the man with the best smile in Major League Soccer, Latif Blessing. Latif, the last time we saw each other, you were inspiring me to dance on the field in Kansas City after an Open Cup win. Yeah. It's been awesome to see your success here in LA, man. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
What have the last couple of years been like for you?
So far, so good. Like, I've been enjoying LA. LA is good. The community, everybody is good for me. You know? So I'm enjoying LA. Yeah.
Let's talk about your positional change, because Latif Blessing, best 11 caliber central midfielder, was maybe not something that I would have predicted a couple of years ago. Maybe not something that you might have predicted.
Yeah.
How did it happen?
First of all, I thank Bob. You know, it's not my position I play. You know, I play like right wing or maybe left wing. But when we started the season, Bob told me like, hey, you know, I'm going to change your position for you. So I feel like, okay, like I'm good to go, you know. I'm a player. So any position the coach believe you want to play, you have to ready to play there. So I thank Bob. Bob made me a great player right now. So I give the credit to Bob, you know. So I work hard with my new position. You know, when I go to training, I train hard. So they call me Conte, you know. I attack every ball. I win every ball. So now they give me the name, like Conte. So I feel like Conte do, like, you know, great job. So I got to look after him to do the same thing for LA to progress. So that's why we do the team last year. It was, like, playing good, you know.
So Bob likes to use players, and in the past it's often been Barcelona players, as inspiration for his players. Did he show you tape of Conte?
Yeah, he showed me tape. Sometimes he can show me Xavi, sometimes he can show me Iniesta. So he say, hey, you know, sometimes, okay, you can do the Iniesta will do, you can do the Xavi will do, so okay, sometimes, okay, you can do your own. So that's why I thank Bob, you know. Bob make me a great player, you know, then I attach my own to it, so it's like... thank Bob, yeah.
There was never any resistance from you.
No.
You, an attacker, a goal scorer.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, Latif,
yeah,
move back a little bit, play like Conte, win the ball. Yeah. You never thought, ah, you know what, Bob, I'm a goal scorer. I should be scoring. Yeah, I should be close to goal.
Yeah, that's why I said to myself. I didn't say to Bob. I said to myself, you know, I'm a goal scorer, you know. Because when I was in Ghana, I was like goal king. So it's like it put me like different position. So I'm not scoring goals. So back home, like my friends, hey, we now hear you scoring goals. So what's going on? I say, like, my new position. So the goals will come. So they should wait. Then I start score one. Now they're happy, you know. Then I start scoring. So it's like good, yeah.
What was the biggest transition for you going into central midfield?
It's not like big deal for me because like back home, like when I was young, I started playing that position. So it's like easy for me to play, you know. Because so I play my team in Ghana. The team I play, they put me like the same position. They give me like free role to play. So it's like I can move all over the field. So it's like the same thing to me. So it's not like different to me. The Bob put me there. I say, okay, it's like the same thing. So I'm going to play. Yeah.
What? How would you describe what Bob asks you to do? What are your roles within the LAFC system?
Yeah, my roles to like, you know, you think like have energy. I can win the balls, you know. So it count on me, you know. He say, hey, you know. I know Latif have energy, you know, to help us. So at the time when we are going to the field, say, hey, you know, bring your energy. When you bring your energy, like, everybody look after you. So everybody keep going. So only thing we need from you, your energy. So that's why, you know.
It is, it transmits, man. It's contagious. Yeah. I can feel your energy. Anytime I'm around you, you just want to smile.
Yeah.
I got to ask you about this. It was on a billboard. It was a big thing in LA. It was the Zlatan moment. You're smiling. Yeah. What do you remember from that moment? I mean, it was iconic in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It's like when I saw the billboard, like I feel like, you know, I feel sad because like we don't do that, you know. Because like everybody, they just tag me, you know. They just do like commercial, like I'm in somewhere. Yeah. I feel bad. Sometimes I feel bad. Like when I saw it, I feel bad. But I assess myself, you know, I'll make it. Next game, I'm going to prove myself to them to say, like, hey, I'm a great player, you know. So I pulled, like, back. Then the next game, I was amazing on the phone. So everybody would say, like, the big boy is, like, you know, it's nothing to do, you know. Zlatan scored two, I scored two. So it's, like, I just feel happy that day, you know. I was so happy. We didn't win the game. I feel, like, bad. We didn't win the game because we have to win. But we didn't win. But it's like game, you know. You can lose, you can draw. But we draw, we take it. Then I feel like, you know, that day I was scored two goals. I was playing good. I was the man of the match, you know, so I just feel happy, you know.
Yeah, you got your come up.
Yeah.
You said, there's the billboard, but check out my name on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah,
yeah. And then you got the last laugh, right? In the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
This El Tráfico rivalry.
Yeah, rivalry.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, I don't know. I experience it
through
the television, and I'm running around yelling. What is it like to be on the field?
Yeah. It's like that game. It's like, you know, we think, like, every time maybe they score us or maybe, like, you know, we're going to score and later on they come just collide and they score us. So I said to my players, like, hey, we can't keep going. This is the moment, you know. I talked to Tyler. I talked to Walker, you know. I said, hey, we can't keep going. Like, we have to motivate ourselves, you know. We can do it. So, like, training, I go to them, I speak to them, you know. I just want to motivate them, you know. Mm-hmm. I just want to be like me, you know. Like, let's go, you know, we can make it. So, like, that's what we do. Then we game, you know, we go all out. Everybody is ready, you know. That's why I beat them. Then say, hey, go home, go and sleep.
Anything in that game, don't ever disbelieve it.
Yeah.
It can happen. It can happen. Don't close your eyes.
Yeah. I told them, hey, don't close your eyes. Oh, happen. Like, let's beat them. They are going home. That's the painful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's beat them. Yeah, going home, yeah.
What is it like to be a part of the best regular season team in MLS history? I mean, what you guys did last year, what Carlos Vela did, is unbelievable,
yeah,
really.
Unbelievable, yeah. Carlos Vela is, like, great player to me, you know. When I was young, I saw this guy in Arsenal. I said, hey, this guy is amazing. Like, I just look at this guy all the time. When Arsenal have game, I just watch it because of this guy. So I just, like, when I was, like, in LA, I say, like, Carlos Vela is coming here. I feel happy. Like, I feel... Hey, I'm going to play with this guy. I feel like, you know, now, like, I'm a star, you know, because I'm going to play with this guy. Now, like, everybody say in Ghana, like, hey, now you're playing with Carlos Vela, so now you're a star, you know. So I feel happy with playing Carlos Vela. Carlos Vela is, like, amazing. One thing I like about Carlos Vela, he never talk, you know. It's like humble, he never talk. That's what I like about this guy, you know. Sometimes when I have problem, I go to him, like, I speak to him, you know. I say, hey, bro, like, come, I'm going to help you. That's what I like about this guy. This guy is amazing. My mentor, you know.
Nice.
It's amazing, yeah.
What do they say in Ghana about what you've done in MLS?
They say a lot. You know, when I go home, it's like I'm a king in Ghana right now. When I go home, I'm a king, you know. Everybody come to my house. Like, a lot of, you can see a lot of people in my house. hey, congratulations, you know, you win something, you know, like, we are hope like you're gonna win the MLS Cup, but it's gonna happen. But you know, next year, you know, you're gonna do it. So everybody, when I go home, I don't have time to go out because like a lot of people are coming to my house, you know. So it's like
I don't go to you. You come to me, right?
Yeah, I come to me.
Come to the King's house, yeah.
It's like they are waiting for like you know after the season. I just talk to my teammate, you know, have like shoes, like you know. So they come for shoes, like clothes, you know. So I just pack for them when I go. When I come to my house, I give them. So it's like, yeah.
And you have a new contract here in LA. Yeah. How settled do you feel? How do you like the city?
The city is good. That's what I'm saying. The city, like, they treat me good. The team LA, they treat me good. Like, the community, when I go out, it's like amazing. In LA, I don't buy anything. they buy everything for me. So it's like, I feel like I'm home. But it's like, sometimes I feel like I need family here. My family is not here. It's like sometimes I feel like sad, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm hoping for my family, one of my family to come here. Because when I saw one of my family at the stadium, like it's going to motivate me like more. That's what I need, you know. So I'm just working out to bring my family here.
Latif, I hope it happens for you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep bringing the good vibes. Thank it's you. Always a pleasure to be
thank
around
you.
You. Good
so
luck
much.
To LA.
Thank you.
Great
you.
To talk, man.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, I love Latif. Only one player in MLS can get me to dance on a field, and that is Latif.
I was there for that.
It was beautiful. He's such a wonderful dude. He just makes everybody around him happy. By the way, Tom Marshall just tweeted, Mexico World Cup. You probably remember him from this show. We have John Arnold on Monday to talk us through Liga MX and CCL. Rodolfo Pizarro told reporters at the Monterey Airport that the video calls with David Beckham helped his decision to move to Inter Miami, that Tata Martino told him the level of MLS is similar to Liga MX, and that he believes moving to Europe will be easier from Major League Soccer. So there you have it from his point of view. Let's quickly talk about some position battles. Just basically, this is a promo for a Doyle column. So
what do you think the odds are Rodolfo Pizarro plays for Trabzonspor before the end of his career?
Trabzonspor?
Yeah. Well, I don't know where in Europe he's going at
he's
one
hit up Fabian Castillo to see
what?
How that went?
Yeah, probably.
I'm pretty sure that's where he played. It's on the Black Sea. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of it in the snow.
Yeah, it's a resort town.
There you go. Boom, nailed it. Show done.
So, position battles, those are going on right now. Is there a preseason result that matters, kind of, that you can base this around, or do you just want to riff on one in particular, Doyle?
I watched Dallas twice now, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with their, I'm calling it a front five, because they're going to play, I think, a 4-2-3-1 that kind of morphs into a 4-3-3, but their new Brazilian D-mid is, I think you write his name in pen.
Thiago Santos.
Correct. But I think everything in front of that is kind of up for grabs. Because they played at times last year, it was like, call them free eight in front of a D-mid. At other times, it was a 4-2-3-1 with a more distinct number 10, which we've seen a lot this preseason with Jesus Ferreira playing as the number 10. But also, Jesus Ferreira was at times last year the best center forward on the team, as our good friend Kalen Carr calls him, the American Firmino.
I couldn't remember who we were calling the American Firmino at this point.
You know Kalen and stuff like this.
Him and Bob disagree on the American Firmino.
Oh, Lord.
But like you could create in your head, it's very easy to see a scenario where Ferreira starts at either of those two places or even at left wing because Santi Mascara has not delivered. Dante Seeley is probably too young. Fafa Picot, I mean, I love what he brings defensively, but he's never been, a high-level goal scorer, really. And then right wing, probably Michael Barrios, but what happens if he struggles? And then all of that, do you have room for Brandon Cervania at one of those eights? Paxton Pomacall, when he gets healthy, where does he go? Oh, by the way, you spent $3 million last year on Brian Acosta. He's probably an eight. And then you have center forward. Zdenek Androsic was great down the stretch last year, but if you look close, it doesn't look like that's a super sustainable rate of putting the ball in the back of the net. So maybe Ferreira takes that spot, or wait, maybe it's Ricardo Pepi who's scoring every game now in preseason.
Or you split it home and away.
I mean, there are a lot of directions it can go. Dallas...
You also
because
have a Pachuca center forward coming down the ring.
Right, in July, yeah. So Dallas have a lot of talent. It's almost overwhelming to try to figure out how they're going to best use it. It almost feels like they have too much talent in that front five. And Luchi Gonzalez is going to have to figure stuff out really quick, which unfortunately is really hard right now because Pomacall, Acosta, and Brandon Cervania are all hurt.
Yeah, that's the bummer. You saw that one come out, and I was just like, oh, God, are we going to be playing this game all year with FC Dallas? Like, who's on the training pitch? Who's not? Who's in the training room?
Just from the U.S. national team perspective, the fact that, once again, Pomacall, Tyler Adams, and Christian Pulisic are all hurt, I'm, like, having, like, John O'Brien, Claudio Reyna flashbacks.
We're thinking after we wrap this up, we're going to pre-record the 2026 World Cup post show where we're like, if everyone was healthy, we had a shot.
I thought you were going to say something else. I was like, I brought the sage, good vibes. Yeah. We'll cleanse this room.
Whatever it takes.
Okay. Well, that ended on a downer.
But I think you made this point a few weeks back where we were having some conversation about, you know, what young guy you want to give space is like, this is the point. This was TAM. This is the change in the CBA and homegrown development is like, there's depth. You have to earn spots. You don't get it handed to you. And for the young guys, it's going to make them better. We're seeing it with Mason Toy, probably, and for the Minnesota.
And for the old guys.
And it continues
to push. Dedek Andrasik did not defend at all when he got to Dallas. That's why he didn't play the first half of last year. Down the stretch, he did what he could to be at least an average defensive forward, and that got him into the national team as well. So, like, this is how it's supposed to be. It's going to be, if you're on a good team, it's going to be hard to get your minutes. You're going to have to earn them.
That's the way I think of Doyle. We keep him young, you know? He can't coast when he comes into this studio. He's got to bring that A game.
As he's leaned over.
Yeah,
just
like between tapes,
I'm ready for my nap.
Yeah, exactly.
He has a cane, y'all.
Where is the cane?
Doyle ordered lunch from across the street to be delivered. He's living the dream right now.
Did he really?
He did. He ordered from Pokeworks across the street.
It's pouring. I'm not going out there.
You say your feet hurt.
Wow. So feet soft. Don't hurt.
Judging.
So
judging.
Soft.
Judging.
Right. Pride of Brampton coming right up. Jonathan Osorio on Canada and their goals for the future. World Cup, anyone?
Comes back to Jonathan Osorio! Two goals in extra time for Jonathan Osorio! The hometown hero as TFC will advance to the conference semifinal.
10 minutes with Jonathan Osorio, Pride of Brampton, sitting down with us in LA. Mm-hmm. Let's talk Canada, man.
Let's do it.
So, the Hex, is it out of reach?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Tell me why not.
Because we got to June. Got, I think, a few games that we can gain some really good points on. And, it's definitely not out of reach. I think the games, our games coming up in March will be very, very important to get nothing less than wins. But if we do, we'll put a lot of pressure on El Salvador, and I think that'll put us in good position.
Is it frustrating to you, and I don't really understand the math on the FIFA rankings, to sit back and know that you can handle your own business, but that it's a complicated formula of wins, losses, quality of the opponents, coefficients that ultimately decides that immediate qualification?
Yeah, I don't understand it myself. I've been trying to wrap my head around it ever since it became what it was. It is what it is. I would much rather, play, competition within the region to earn your chance to get into the Hex like before. So I kind of thought that's what the Nations League was for, but I guess not. It's something totally different. And then it changed the way they did it, so it is what it is. I mean, everybody, I'm sure there's other nations saying the same thing, and it is what it is.
What did you learn in Nations League as a team, as an individual, about what you guys have within this group?
We know we have something special. We have a really good generation. We have really talented players. We didn't play the strongest of teams, but we still played in some pretty difficult places, and we got the job done. And then we had the two games against the U.S., one that went well, one that didn't. But we learned a lot about ourselves in those games, and we think that we measure up with the best in the region.
Where do you think you fell short against the U.S. in moments? One good, one bad. That win against the U.S. could have been massive for the coefficient. Where did it fall away from you a little bit?
I think the beginning of the game. Conceding the way we did, the first two goals, I would say, really put us in a hole. I thought after that, I mean, normal in a game that you go down early that the other team starts to push and starts to really maybe control the game. But when you're up like that, I guess it becomes a different game. So who knows how it would have went. Saying that, we still did control the game. We played the way we like to play. We tried to make a push, but I think those early goals really hurt us in the end.
Those chips have already fallen. You got work to do. Let's talk more long-term, though. In the U.S., yeah. We often dig into sort of our soccer culture and our youth national teams and the academies and the pathway.
Yeah.
Take us inside that conversation in Canada. Youth development, yeah. Where it's going, what you think is being done right, and where you think there's growth potential.
Well, I think it's growing. It's growing. I wouldn't say it's growing rapidly. I think we're taking step by step, which is fine. I think the only thing that's missing is to take big steps. And I wouldn't say in our youth, a lot is changing for good. I think they're making more academies, within the regions, and they're finding ways to find the best players and put them into the MLS academies. I think they're doing that pretty well from what I see. There's a lot of good players coming up. And we still got players, young players going abroad, and that's working out as well. So I think it has to be a mix of both, which I think they're doing a pretty good job of at the moment. I think now it's just if we get results and make big steps in with the full national team, I think that changes everything, and that's the most important, I think, right now.
Have you seen a change in Alfonso pre and post Bayern?
I have.
What's the change?
Confidence, one, and not that he didn't have any, it's just it's grown. It's more of a confidence on a world stage now. Now he knows that he's at a level of the best in the world, and I think you see it in his play in Bayern Munich. As a person, he's the same, which is great. He's the same person, but as a player, he's maturing and he's more confident in himself. And I think tactically as well, he's a lot more, he's a lot tactically stable, more tactically stable at post Bayern Munich.
Him as a player, he seems so dynamic. He does things that most people can't imagine. As a fellow pro, when you watch him do some of those things, when you tune in to watch Bayern or you see the highlights or you see the goal he scored recently in this camp, what's your perspective on him as a pro, as his peer? Just the level of talent.
Yeah, it's amazing to have the mixture of, physical capability plus the skill. Not many players around the world are blessed with that, and he is. He's just rapid with and without the ball, in control. It's amazing to see. And, he's finding his ways, he's finding the right times to go forward and make a difference. Also defending, and he's doing everything. It's amazing to watch. Every time, every camp, he's just better. And you could have easily guessed that would happen going to a club like Bayern Munich.
Left back or left wing for Alfonso? What do you think?
Long term, I like him as a left winger. I really like him attacking. But he's doing so well left back. I mean, why would you take him out of there? If Bayern Munich has him there and they see him there. Maybe left back has him doing a lot more in the game, maybe. So maybe left back.
Joy to watch. You've been a joy to watch for Toronto as well. What's this year represent for you individually and collectively? Almost got another one this last year.
Yeah, I think it's the same as every year. It's to play the final game of the season, to... for me, I always say, it's hard to say, everybody can say the goal is to win MLS Cup. But I think getting there is the goal. In the final, so many things can happen, I feel. But to keep getting there consistently is tough. And to put ourselves in a position to win MLS Cup, I think, has to be the goal. And as well, we want to put ourselves in better position to have a home game in the final, so that means going after Supporters Shield and all that. I think those are all goals for our club this year.
Kind of joke with you with the Pride of Brampton thing. I mean, you are.
Hey man, I'm I'm proud of Brampton.
I know you are, you get an opportunity that most people don't get, right?
Yeah,
which is to play out the prime of your career in your city.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, how is it like day to day, month to month? When does that really jump out and hit you? When are you just like, my God, I have this opportunity that I maybe never could have dreamed of?
I it hits me every now and then. I make sure it hits me so that I don't take it for granted. And sometimes it's. Sometimes it comes at me from different places, from a teammate telling me, seeing a teammate away from home, or a teammate calling home and saying, no, did you see my game? Like, I luckily I don't have to do that. My family is at the game, at every game, at every home game, and my friends as well. So it's a blessing. It's been a blessing to be able to play at home and to play in such big matches at home as well. And for my city, it's great. I think it won't really, really, really hit me until maybe the end of my career. And then I'll really see how amazing that has been.
Do you see yourself leaving?
I don't. At the moment, I don't. You never know in football. You never know. Do I see myself leaving? We'll see.
Brampton, stand up. All right, man.
All right,
good
man.
To chat.
Appreciate it.
Okay, mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. I'm steadily losing steam, carriers of disease.
Wait, let me just...
That are my son.
There's an interesting
friends.
Transaction that just happened.
Yeah,
the MVP of USL League One last year, Dallas kid Arturo Rodriguez, League One is actually the third division, was just loaned to Real Monarchs, who won... the USL championship title last year. That's obviously Real Salt Lake's USL team. USL championship is the second division. The USL 1 MVP was loaned to the USL championship...
of a different club.
Of a different club with an option to buy.
Well,
so like one of the things I've always thought about soccer in the U.S. is like there needs to be more of an internal marketplace for our players to kind of facilitate movement and team building, and not just for the player's sake, but for the sake of the clubs as well. A little bit more flexibility. This is one to keep an eye on for me. Like if you want to, okay. So that was maybe way too deep.
Can I go even deeper on this? By getting Arturo Rodriguez out of the way, they make room for David Rodriguez, his younger brother, who is better than him.
Oh.
All right.
Some beef in the Rodriguez.
That's the future.
Who's better?
What do you think, Suze?
I don't care.
Okay. Eric in Fort Worth says Albert Elise is leaving on a free at the end of the season. Do we know that? Is he in the last year of his contract?
He is. And he has previously asked Houston not to re-up him and just to let him go on a free. But the question is, will he actually get a better offer in terms of salary and situation than the Dynamo at the end of this year?
Interesting. So this question from Eric, should the Dynamo take any offer they get for him? He just got a green card, which confuses the circumstances. Like if you got an offer in the summer, should you just take it or you just play it out?
No, just play it out. Because you're not – whatever – let's say they get $2 million for him. That's not going to be enough to go out and get a player as good as Albert.
They probably will have to go pay off some of the acquisition fees on him too. So
ride it out. See if you can get to 55 points, make the playoffs. Maybe 2017 happens again.
And then you just like what? You play chicken with him? You're like, here's our offer.
Yeah. I mean, you give him a good offer. If he's that good to be the best player on a 55-point team, then he's worth whatever. I don't want to say whatever, but he's probably a true DP in this league, not a TAM guy.
Yeah, put up. That's what they're saying to him. As a side note, Eric thinks they might be better without Albert Elise.
Eric is wrong.
He's
a bad take.
He's a big memo guy. Martinez,
Eric,
memo,
that's a
and
bad
Hansen.
Take.
Bad take, Eric.
Yeah, seems bad like take,
a
bad Eric. Take.
So you're going to have to sit the rest of this mailbag out, Eric. Sorry.
Luke Southmade wants to know what we think of Orlando City's offseason. He, in particular, is looking at Junior Urso and Pedro Galese.
You talk about a positional battle. Center midfield for Orlando is, like, stacked.
Urso, Jackson Mendez, Ori Russell. There's one or two others.
Yeah, my guy. No, Seba Mendez.
Yeah, Sebastian Jegson.
Mauricio Pereira, who's like a DP signing from last year that we really didn't see any of, but was very productive in Russia.
He's the 10.
He's the 10. He's not like, it's not.
And then they have the kid Pereira, the Colombian-American U20 defensive midfielder they brought on loan.
Yeah.
I assume it's going to be Mendez and Junior or so.
Yeah, I would say the same. I love Sebastian Mendes, so I just hope they don't get
overall it. First year of Oscar Pareja for Orlando. What's the big question? Well, we're doing previews, aren't we?
Yeah,
we're gonna do previews in like 2 weeks from now. Should we just let this one?
Let it.
Oh, well, no. The question was, what do we think of the window? I think they've done well.
I think
they brought in a center back, which they needed.
They brought in two.
Yeah.
On loan, so they're not committed if they stink.
Yeah, that's true. And one is a younger Brazilian that you could then buy. They've brought in depth in central midfield. They have Pereira coming through as well. They finalized Juan, because I don't think Juan
they
was...
They finalized Juan.
Which was necessary.
They signed a couple of homegrown kids, one of whom, I guess Jordan Bender is... Like, he scored the other day, so they drafted the right guy in the super draft. It looks good, but the question isn't with Oscar Pereja. The question is, are they going to stand back and say, all right, well, you know, we wanted more than 39 points this year, but we see real improvement. He has to get three more years, because it's about building the culture of this team and building the infrastructure in terms of talent.
Also, a name we haven't mentioned in a while, Dom Dwyer.
Oh, him.
Does he play?
Big year for
that. That was the name I was going to ask about.
Guys, this is. I feel good about Orlando.
Really?
I do.
Are you. Wait. 46 and a half points over under.
Wait, what did they finish last year? How many last year?
30.
It was like 37.
Okay, so this is like a 10 point increase. Yeah, I'm going over. Yes.
Over 46 and a half. Wow.
That's a playoff team. I'm going to go under.
Under.
Wow.
Come on, guys.
Orlando
we don't hate Orlando City, but you got to trust that the misery. It's like CCL. It's better to just.
I don't know. I got a hunch.
Do you think Dom Dwyer plays for Orlando this year?
I do.
The whole year.
That's the question, right?
Like the only team. He doesn't get traded.
Oh, yeah.
Over 46?
I think so.
He's got to stick to Dom.
Yes.
This is his renaissance.
Yeah, Dom needs to be there to score some goals.
Speaking of CCL, we have our annual preview show on Monday. So it may be a holiday, but we are here. Wherever you get podcasts, it will be available. And on YouTube, we'll spend time going over every Liga MX team with John Arnold from Goal.com. We'll talk to Gonzalo Pineda of the Seattle Sounders, who has experience on both sides of the coin. We will take a close look at every single team, make some predictions, talk about the history of the tournament, reminisce a little about the runs that made us fall in love and gave us CCL fever. So look forward to that, and have a great weekend.
Well, I was going to say, last thing, Doyle, I think I'll give you this. I think Orlando gets more points than Minnesota.
Whoa!
Because I'm sitting on a table with two people who got free jerseys.
Oh, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Check out the. I didn't. I was going
to. And I think Orlando has the respect.
Check out the back of this jersey.
Necessary.
It's so good. And then I just got traditional.
It says MLS.com.
Yeah.
It's a podcast.
No, you guys, look at mine. Look at mine, too. I have one.